What does the number 69752 mean?
It was my grandfather's tattoo on his forearm from the Holocaust. And when we were kids growing up in Guatemala and we would ask him about his number, he would say that it was his phone number and that he had it tattooed there so that he wouldn't forget it.
This week on Alt Latino, we're speaking with Guatemalan author Eduardo Alfon. His most recent book, The Polish Boxer, is mesmerizing. Both Felix and I are completely in love with this book.
It's a combination of three stories that are woven together throughout the course of the book, and it touches on Guatemala, but also touches on life in general. Jasmine, why don't you read us an excerpt from the book?
Do you know, Alfon, how to say poetry in Cachiquel? Juan asked suddenly, and I said no, I had no idea. Pachunsi, he said. Pachunsi, I repeated, and I savored the word for a time, taking pleasure in it purely for its sound, for the delectable lure of its pronunciation. Pachunsi, I said once more. Do you know what it means? He asked, and although I hesitated, I said no, but that it didn't really matter. Braid of words, he said.
Lovely, your reading of it.
Eduardo, before we get into specifics about the book, why don't you tell us a little bit about the theme of the book and the story behind the book?
I don't know if I can, but I'd love to try. As you know, it's a very hard book to pin down. It's a mosaic, no, of episodes in this narrator's his voyage. He's got my name for some reason. He looks a lot like me. But he smokes a lot. I don't smoke. And he is a teacher of literature in Guatemala.
Just as you are.
Just as I was.
Oh, you were.
I haven't taught for some years now, but I was when I wrote this book. And there are several common themes, I think, that unite the pieces in the book. One is my grandfather's survival story in Auschwitz. It weaves in and out of the narrative, as it did in my life. You know, his story came in and out of my life constantly, and it does that in the book. But it's also a book about a Serbian classical pianist who desires deeply to be the one thing his father forbids him to be, which is a gypsy. It's a book made up of stories or episodes or chapters, if you will, of this quest the narrator is on, the search for roots, the triumph of the irrational, perhaps, over the rational. So it is a very difficult book, I think, to try to summarize in a blurb. I'm struggling here.
Okay, we're going to rescue you. We're going to pull you out for this.
Yes, please do.
No,
please
because
do.
That was you very masterfully weave together. It's not an accident that we chose that idea of, you know, the definition of poetry, the braids of words, because the stories are braided as well.
Right.
Let's take a short musical break. We're going to play something from the beautiful soundtrack to the film El Norte, which was released in 1983. It was directed by Gregory Nava. It's the story of two Guatemalan immigrants who leave to escape the genocide in Guatemala and make their way to the U.S. This is a track called Raíz Viva by Los Folcloristas. Okay, let's go back to your grandpa and that number on his forearm.
It was his way of joking, his way of saying, I don't want to talk about it, don't ask. And he didn't. He didn't talk about it for many, many, many years. And suddenly, about 10 years ago, he decided to open up to me. And he told me the story behind that number. And that is the story that I try to tell in the book. But the image, that childhood vision of your grandfather's forearm having a number on it, the entire book revolves around that image, that I have, you know, very vividly tattooed somewhere in me.
This book is the first time I've read a discussion of both identities, the Latino identity and the Jewish identity, paralleled in such a logical way, because you parallel the Jewish Holocaust and many, many, many years later, what happened in Guatemala. I mean, Guatemala had a civil war, a genocide, which actually the genocide trials recently restarted against the dictator Efraín Ríos Montt. And you parallel it in a way that is so logical. They're both based in this lexicon of horror. Was it always that logical to you?
No, not at all. Not at all. And it wasn't intentional either in the writing of the book. I think it's important for me to say that the pieces in the book, Jasmine, the one you read from is called Distant, and it was written as a short story. It's the beginning story or the beginning chapter of the book, and it's about a student I had named Juan Calel, who was an indigenous Mayan Guatemalan poet that I suddenly met at the university. And my only intention in writing that piece was to write about him. I can only write about one individual when I'm writing. But one man is all of us, isn't he? If I can tell you the story of one man, I am really telling you all of our stories condensed in that one man. So when you see the horror of the Holocaust through one man's survival, and you see the horror of genocide in Guatemala, it's the same horror. It's the same oppression. It's the same racism. It's the same thing all over again, whether it be a Jew or an indigenous person. The evilness, the meanness of the actions are the same, and they are as appalling. So when placed side by side, they make sense. They're logical, even though they happened far apart in time, far apart in space. They are the same, as deep a wound in both cases.
Let's take another musical break. This is also from the soundtrack to El Norte. This is called Huaynos de Zampoñas. So your family survives the Holocaust, and then they move to Guatemala, where there's another Holocaust. Is there a sense of doom in your family?
No, and I'll tell you why. Most Guatemalans from my social class refuse to accept what happened there, what is happening there. I grew up in the 1970s, completely oblivious to what was going on. We didn't know. You mentioned the trial that is going on now. There is a strong fraction of the population, the oligarchy, the upper class, the people in power, who refuse to acknowledge what happened. I can tell you from my own experience, 1970s was a very, very turbulent time, very violent time. We left the day of my 10th birthday. We left Guatemala the day I turned 10. We fled. 2 months before that day, there was a battle between the guerrilla leftist and the military inside my school. They came into my school one day and battled each other for an entire day with us in there. My memory of that day is not a bad one. It's incredible what I'm about to tell you. Right. It is not a negative memory. It was an off day. We were, you know, I was 9. We were with my friends sequestered in a gym. We were used to listening to bullets because this fighting had come into Guatemala City. So we didn't know the danger we were in because we didn't know the danger the country was in. We were overprotected, sheltered, kept away from that part of Guatemala's history. What I'm telling you now is still going on. People don't want to talk about it. People don't want to mention it. People don't want to, say not only what happened 20, 30, 40 years ago, but what's happening now. Juan Calel is happening now. It's not in the 70s that I'm writing about this kid. Going back to your question, my family, when they go from the Polish experience of World War II and arrive in Guatemala, they arrive in a bubble version of Guatemala. Yeah, they hide in this crystalline world that is separated from what's really going on in the country. Hence the title of the story, Distant. These two Guatemalas that coexist and are so distant.
And what you're telling me is, I understand it because I'm from Latin America and I understand that there can be two Latin Americas. In some sense, it's shocking because I have Guatemalan friends here in Washington who talk to me about being indigenous and the genocide and and the inescapability of it. At the same time, there's something in this book which is about the normalcy of violence. I don't want to say that is the Latin American experience only, because obviously this happened with the Serbians, this happens in Africa, this happens in many cultures, but there is a normalcy of violence, as what you are explaining to me about your school. I've had many Central American friends talk to me about, I still have a bullet lodged in my body. Yeah. And I think oftentimes I've wondered what makes us all Latin Americans.
Well,
what is that experience that joins us? Is it just the language? Is it just that we're los cachorros del león español? The how do you say that? The remnants of the Spanish Empire? Or is it that we all share a lexicon of atrocity?
Well, sadly, it's the latter. What I just told you, what I just mentioned about the Guatemalans that coexist and the violence and the atrocities and the genocide and the dictators, every Latin American can relate. Every Latin American can tell me more or less that same story, whether he is Argentinian, Bolivian, Chilean, Peruvian. We are hermanados. We are united by this common history, that is not so far in the past. So it is a sad bond that we have, but it is a bond, much as language can be, or a common experience, or a common geography. We have gone through a common tragedy. There's one song in particular, when things get too somber, as they just did, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, it just mellows
it out.
Well, it
ain't no use sitting and wonder why, baby, even you don't know by now. And it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, baby, it'll never do somehow. When your rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window and I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm traveling on, but don't think twice, it's all right.
When I was thinking about the playlist or the soundtrack of your life, the one singer-songwriter that takes up most of my iPod, and it's Bob Dylan.
And it ain't no use in the turning on your light, babe, the light I never knowed. And it ain't no use in turning on your light, babe, I'm on the dark side of the road. But I wish there was something you would do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. But we never did too much talking anyway. But don't think twice, it's all right. it ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, like you never done before. And it ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, I can't hear you anymore. I'm a-thinking and a-wondering, walking down the road. I once loved a woman, a child, I am told. I give her my heart, but she wanted my soul. But don't think twice, it's all right. So long, honey, baby, where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye is too good a word, baby, so I just say fairly well. I ain't saying you treated me unkind, you could have done better, but I don't mind. You just kind of wasted my precious time. Don't think twice, it's all right.
Talk to me a little bit about this. As you spent your first 10 years in Guatemala, then you moved here to the United States to where?
Yeah, Florida, South Florida.
Oh, that's South Florida.
Yeah.
I guess you sort of melded into a very typical American, or in this case, bicultural existence. Why Bob Dylan, and how did he enter your life?
Bob Dylan wasn't always there. You know, I was a typical American adolescent. In the 80s, which is a very bad decade, especially for clothes and hairstyle.
See? The 80s. I told you, Jasmine.
Yeah.
I didn't live through them, so I'm a big fan.
You're lucky you don't have those photos in your yearbooks.
See, if you had photos, you wouldn't love it as much. Okay, we're off the topic. Go back.
So I was in my late 20s when I discovered books as a reader. Not as a writer, just as a reader. I was in my late 20s and just started reading voraciously. And I think that's the moment when you start seeing songwriters as poets, or when I began to see songwriters as poets. Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen and Tom Waits and all of these fantastic composers that are poets as well. So you're not just into it for the music. I got into it for the poetry.
And there's a lot of musicality in the language that you use, because there's a lot of musicality in Guatemalan Spanish. Let me read you an excerpt of the book that we both were crazy about. You say, you're traveling through Guatemala looking for your student who has dropped out of school. And you start talking about the names of the towns and the places, and you say, all of these names are like charms. They cast some sort of linguistic spell, I thought as I drove, and I recited them like little prayers. Perhaps my favorite are the Tenangos, Chichicastenango, Quetzaltenango, Momostenango, and Huehuetenango. I love them as words, as pure language. There's such a musicality.
Yes, that is intentional. Music, to me, you either get it or you don't. You don't think about it, you don't rationalize it, you either feel it or you don't. And here I'm getting close, Felix, to jazz, especially to jazz.
Well, no? let's go there. Let's play some music. You brought in Moose the Mooch from Charlie Parker.
Thank you.
I want to read another part of the book. It's a very short part, and it's very funny. You or the professor in this book is traveling to a conference about Mark Twain, and he says they've picked him up from the airport along with another professor, and they're driving him, and you write, "It occurred to me then, as the limousine carrying a Guatemalan and a Mormon rumbled past deer carcasses toward an academic conference on Mark Twain, that I was in the wrong place. Sometimes, just briefly, I forget who I am."
Oh, that's very pretty. I'd forgotten that.
You should have her read your book on tape, man.
Yeah.
Well, you have to. Felix and I were talking about the sense of humor in this book, that you'll be talking about something very intense, very erotic, or very horrific, or very, and all of a sudden you'll throw in a line that makes you laugh out loud. I mean, this Serbian musician is lamenting his fate, and all of a sudden you say, "I'm pretty sure he was scratching his balls under the table."
Gonads.
Gonads. Okay. All right.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, it's a sense of humor is very important, especially when you're being serious. It's not important if you're being funny. It's you know, it's just there. But if you are going into the realm of solemnity, one small crack, it makes it even more solemn, doesn't it? So, yes.
You know, and when you talk about, you know, you apply that humor to that sense of identity, sense of self, it made sense to me when I saw the song Nebraska from Bruce Springsteen on your playlist. This album is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah, it's by far Springsteen's best, I think.
Saw her standing on her front lawn, just a twirling her baton. Me and her went for rides in ten innocent people down. From the town of Lincoln, Nebraska, with a sawed-off 410 on my lap, through the badlands of Wyoming, I killed everything in my path. Can't say that I'm sorry for the things that we've done, at least for a little while, sir. Me and her, we had us some fun. Now the jury brought in a guilty verdict, and the judge sentenced me to death. Midnight in prison storeroom, the leather straps across my chest. Sheriff, when the man that sweet, sir, and snaps my poor head back, you make sure my pretty baby sitting right there on my lap.
The story behind the song is drew me in. You know, it's Charles Starkweather, this serial killer from Lincoln, Nebraska. It's Starkweather who's telling us his story as a serial killer in the song. And going back, Jasmine, to what we were talking about and Guatemala genocide and the Holocaust, and there's one line in this song that is for me an epitaph. Springsteen sings, "I guess there's just a meanness in this world."
They declared me unfit to live. Said into that great void my soul be heard. He wanted to know why I did what I did. Well, sir, I guess there's just a meanness in this world.
There's this thing that I sometimes feel. I just felt it last week in France. I was listening to a Mexican guitarist play this beautiful ranchera, and I suddenly became nostalgic about being Latin American.
Rancheras will do that for you.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
And there was no alcohol involved. It was you know, straight out. Guitarist, ranchera, and me listening to him. Estamos hermanados. I have a sense of being a Latin American.
Yes, la tristeza mía.
Bueno, queridos.
Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you very much. And Jasmine, thank you.
We want to remind our listeners that you can hear all the songs that Eduardo brought in, including the ones we weren't able to get to, because it's a great, great playlist, on our website at npr.org/altlatino.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
And we want to remind you again, you can hear all the songs we've ever played on the show on Alt Latino Radio at npr.org/music. Again, Eduardo Alfon, thank you so much for joining us here on Alt Latino this week.
Thank you, guys. Bravo.
My name's Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst.
Thank you so much for listening.
This has been Alt Latino.
Yo no sé qué será de mi vida, que de mí no se aparta ni Dios. Ay, pobres de mis ojos, cómo han llorado por su traición.